Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kirsten Show. I am your host, Dr. Kirsten Lauritsen, and today I have a guest with me, Dr. Kalia Wattles. We are going to dive all into fertility from the functional perspective. Dr. Kalia, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be with you talking about my favorite subject.
Same. I'm so excited to have you on today. We've followed and kind of like known each other for a long time, like since I think you were working in 2019 at the AFMCP. That's how we like got connected.
We've been manifesting this moment for
years. We have been. Yeah, we've stayed connected, which is the best. And I actually learned so much from you for my own, like preparing for my own pregnancy journey. So I'm just stoked to get to do this today. So why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, like background, go as deep or not as you want. How'd you get to doing what you do today?
Awesome. Thank you. Well, I'm a naturopathic doctor by training. So I did my doctorate in naturopathic medicine and then went on to do additional training through the Institute for Functional Medicine, where I became an IFM certified practitioner. And throughout that entire journey, I was finding myself, as we do. Our real life informs what we love to do clinically in a lot of ways. And while I was in my naturopathic program, I had two babies. I'm not sure I recommend that strategy.
I can't believe you did that.
I also can't believe I did that, but that's what happened. So I had two pregnancies, and that really motivated me to learn more about how lifestyle medicine, functional medicine, naturopathic medicine can support fertility. So I basically cold called all the fertility clinics in my area and said, I understand I'm not a traditional student. Please let me in and let me rotate with you and watch your visits and see how my medicine can support what you do.
Wow.
And they let me, three different fertility clinics let me. So for an entire year, I rotated with my local reproductive endocrinologist doing intakes, doing egg retrievals, doing all kinds of fun fertility treatments. And it reinforced to me how, you know, some people are going to, IVF is part of their journey. And I am so grateful that that technology exists. But I feel so confident that with the things I do, I can set them up for success, whatever, wherever their path leads them. So I just kept learning and seeking out all of this information about fertility. And then ultimately, functional fertility, my practice was born that utilizes systems biology to support patients really wherever they are in their fertility journey. If they're just thinking preconception, if they've never tried before, they want to make sure that their health is optimized heading into a pregnancy. If they're doing IUI or IVF, wherever they're at, I feel so confident that functional medicine can help them to create resiliency in their reproductive health, but really in their health overall. And I think you and I really are aligned on this, that anything that we're doing to support our patients, you know, in their fertility is ultimately so that they have abundant health. And I always say, we want to set you up so that you have an easy time getting pregnant, a healthy and safe pregnancy, and that you have the freedom in your health to have longevity and you can enjoy this family that you've worked so hard for. So that's the story in a nutshell.
I love it though, because I think, and I want to actually dive into like the systems base of like functional medicine for people, because I don't always know that people they don't entirely know what that is. But I love what you said there though, because it's not just about folk, and this is actually, I would say, a mindset thing, but like, it's not just getting lost in like the fertility piece. It's setting ourselves up for long-term success, not just like the short-term piece. And sometimes I think that can take a little bit of that like stress off of your mind, especially if you're in the middle of trying to get pregnant, and in the whole fertility process, it can be a little, you know, a little tough sometimes.
You're right. It is a mindset. It is a mindset shift. And we're all going to come to that mindset change in our own good time.
Yep.
And maybe, can I give a perfect example of this that just came up in my practice? So I've been working with a patient who has been trying to conceive for almost 2 years at this point. And she sent me a message recently and said, you know, everyone I've talked to, all the fertility specialists I've seen, they've always made me feel like my body was broken, but they would overcome that with modern medicine and they would get me pregnant anyway. Where I started working with you and had this mindset shift of, it's not just about getting pregnant right now. It's about supporting your body holistically using a systems approach that we can talk about. And throughout that process of getting our body into its optimal health, hopefully a great pregnancy is going to be a side effect of that. But that's right. not what it's about. It's not just about like forcing and overcoming these barriers without digging deep and looking it into the underlying factors of why this isn't working in the first place. So yeah. I think that that mindset piece is very important for all of us mm-hmm. and practitioners to remember too.
Mm-hmm, for sure. We could camp there and it'll probably come up again as we go through, but I would love to talk a little bit about, let's dive into that systems-based approach. Yeah. So what are we talking about here when just like what you talked about, like what are you with this particular client or patient too? Mm-hmm. What is it that taking a systems-based approach gives the opportunities for, I suppose, yeah. as far as setting up our health?
I love working with body systems. So in functional medicine, we're trained to use a really foundational tool in my practice. It's called the functional medicine matrix. And it essentially is a map of our body systems. And we think about how systems are operating independently, but then how they're all supporting each other and how they're all interconnected. So maybe I'll take just like 45 seconds yes. and give the overview of what those body systems are. So we look at assimilation, that's our gut health. It's the bacteria in our gut. It's the way that we digest food and pull nutrients and put them to use in our body. So assimilation, we look at defense and repair. That's our body's inflammation level, infections, our immune system. We look at energy, and that's really our cellular energy production. And I love to talk about mitochondria. I talk about this all the time. We can talk about mitochondria.
We will.
Energy really means, do we have the cellular energy we need to power ovulation, fertilization, implantation, early embryo development? We look at biotransformation and elimination. And that really speaks to how our body interacts with environmental toxicants, how we process those, remove those from the body. We look at transport, and this really describes our blood flow and our lymphatic system. And we're learning more and more how important blood flow is through our pelvic organs to nourish the cells of our ovaries, for example, to bring in fresh blood and nutrients, to bring out waste products. So that's super important. We look at communication. That's hormones. We spend a lot of time here with fertility, and we know fertility is so much more than just hormones, but they certainly play a big role. And then we look at structural integrity, and that means big structures like our skeleton all the way down to tiny structures like our cell membranes and how our brain and our ovaries communicate, for example. So these are all systems in our body. And like I said, we're looking at them, you know, I'm looking at your hormones and I'm looking at your gut health, but I'm also looking at how those systems influence each other. So as I'm working with someone, I'm collecting their health history, their family history, signs and symptoms that they have, diagnoses they've received, and I am plotting it on the functional medicine matrix so I can understand which area of your body is most out of balance. Because humans are really complex. We've all got a lot going on. And I think sometimes the more complex our case is, we're like, well, where do we start? Everything seems like it's out of order here. Mm-hmm. So when we actually look at it in a physical way by creating a map, we can say, okay, your energy production seems to be the most out of balance. We're going to start there. And then we'll see how improving your energy systems actually improves your hormones and helps your gut health. Mm-hmm. So it helps both of us, both me and my patient, because I can see where a natural entry point is, but then it also allows us to almost do an inventory and make sure that all of your body systems are supported, right? Because we're in the business of holistic health, of comprehensive precision medicine. So that's what that tool allows us to do.
I also love it too, because it's almost like clearing the smoke a little bit. Like when you really do a functional workup for someone, it looks like oftentimes there's something like either a little bit or a lot in every category, depending mm-hmm. on where anyone's coming from. Yep. And so when you just focus on that one spot and just give yourself a starting point, it's so cool to like watch a lot of the things start to like take care of themselves. And then you start to see where some of the other pieces are that we need to look at. It's by far one of the most useful tools I found really in all of my doctor practice things, because I mean, you know, like you having those evaluations that really give you an idea of everything that's happening in the system. Like, yes, we get to focus on the one individual system, but we also are looking at how everything is functioning in as like an integrated whole. And that's, it's the best.
It really is the best. And especially I think about with diagnoses like unexplained infertility, which is so frustrating, such a frustrating diagnosis. It's almost always outside the reproductive axis, right? That's why someone hasn't figured it out yet. You've had the reproductive workup. So then we go back to the matrix and say, okay, let's look outside just your uterus and your ovaries and look at what else is going on. And oftentimes there's some pretty juicy info there.
Right, right. Okay. Gosh, there's so many different ways we could go with this. Let's talk a little bit about like if someone is, well, we will get to like how people can set themselves up for like having success with fertility and all of that, things they could do like preconception wise. But let's say someone is struggling with fertility. What are some like maybe most common areas that you see like maybe that somebody hasn't necessarily thought of yet? Like you mentioned the gut and you mentioned energy and like mitochondria. Like go ahead and just start there, let's say.
Well, I think there's, it's interesting. You probably noticed this too. You'll get patient presentations that come in waves. Like all of a sudden you're seeing everybody has this thing. And then I don't know why that happens, but it comes in waves. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm seeing so many people that have something autoimmune going on. So I talk about autoimmune thyroid disease a lot. Hashimoto's is really, really common autoimmune thyroid disorder. And I don't know why this one is still so hard to catch, because we can measure thyroid antibodies so easily. But it's missed a lot. And so a lot of my patients will come, they've had a very simple thyroid screen, but antibodies have not been measured yet. And so we'll find that they have elevated thyroid antibodies, that qualifies as autoimmune thyroid disease. And so then we can ask why. Why is the immune system hyperstimulated? Is it something going on with intestinal hyperpermeability? Do they have some infection going on? Do they have periodontal disease? Is there a toxin exposure? We can kind of go looking for these immune triggers. So it's a clue that helps us to figure this out. And oftentimes when we address that immune hyperstimulation, our pregnancy outcomes are better. Our fertility outcomes are better. So that's a big theme I've been seeing. Another one that I think doesn't get enough attention conventionally is just systemic inflammation, right? Mm-hmm. We know that inflammation that, again, comes from intestinal barrier function that's been compromised or some underlying infection or high glycemic diet or whatever the cause is. If we have chronic systemic inflammation, it can impair the health of our endometrium, which is that inner lining of the uterus. And the endometrium is what receives a fertilized egg, right? And it has to be ready. It has to be ready to receive that. And if there's lots of inflammation, then we can have an impairment in that process. Inflammation can also, inflammation, once it's in your bloodstream, it's going everywhere. It doesn't pick an organ system. It's going everywhere. And that can include the ovaries. And we can see inflammation inside the ovaries where that tissue will get really inflamed and will start to waste away a little bit. And we'll see things like anovulatory cycles, or we'll see lower progesterone production. So I really try to get ahead of this systemic inflammation and figure out where it's coming from. And I'm going to be really honest, sometimes it's super hard to figure out where it's coming from. So we have to kind of support the gut health. Going back to the matrix, support the gut health, support our immune system, support our biotransformation pathways. And then oftentimes we can get ahead of that inflammation.
Yeah, because sometimes people are kind of doing a lot of the right things, right? Like they've kind of got their diet locked in, nutrition locked in. They're and like it looks pretty darn good. They're getting a decent amount of exercise that, you know, is not overdoing it but not underdoing it. They have looked at different areas of where they can reduce stress and all those. You know, it's really interesting because you still see this seems to be the group that I tend to like attract a lot are the ones that are like, I'm doing all the things, but like, I don't understand what else is happening here. So I just, you know, I know that sometimes finding that systemic inflammation can be really tricky, even when it seems like you're doing all of the things that, you know, we're not eating sugar and stuff like that.
Well, good thing people are coming to see you, because let's not underestimate the power of just stress and our mental, emotional, spiritual health to drive inflammation, right? Because I think that's the part that's often missed too. It's like, oh, you're eating a phytonutrient-rich, low glycemic diet and you don't have food sensitivities and your gums are healthy, but what's going on in your wanting to control every aspect of your life and all the shoulds and all of these you know, psychological stressors that drive our physiology.
Yeah. And my favorite one, maybe I'll link it here in the show notes, but like my favorite, I'm just loving all the studies that are coming out now that are showing like with negative emotions and how we've kind of, as a society, kind of developed either not dealing with our emotions. So it's like everything is big and we get kind of lost in the chaos of it, or we're storing them and like we're just ignoring them, like they don't exist, and trying to just repress them. And that, and what's interesting is like I was just reading a study, another one, that with guilt and shame, inflammation markers were going up when people had that and or were feeling that emotion. And I just think that's so fascinating, because if you think about, you know, anytime people are dealing with these even like really just tough health things, how much of it is being caused by something from way back when, but like also being added on as far as how we're experiencing it now, you know? And I mean, I had endometriosis. We're talking a lot about, you know, fertility and things like that. And one of the things that I was really nervous about was getting pregnant, because I know that that's one thing that can be really difficult with that particular condition. And the inflammation, the inflammatory part of it and all of it. But I've done a lot of work on it, so it's not necessarily luck, but you know, it wasn't something that I struggled with, which was really, really great, you know? But it's also because especially when you start looking at it from all of the different perspectives, it's not just about reducing inflammation and doing all of those things, but also also looking at, well, how is your gut functioning? How is your brain functioning? How are you handling these emotions? How are you handling your day to day? It's all part of it. It's really, really important.
Yeah. And something that's interesting is oftentimes fertility is someone's first major entry point into the healthcare system.
Yeah. Like, isn't that
people
fascinating?
People who've been healthy in the past and now their struggle to get pregnant is like the first time that they needed help, that they couldn't make the thing happen when they did their own research and implemented these strategies.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone who's always been like a very self-directed, self-motivated person where I'm going to implement these steps and I will get this outcome, when it doesn't work, wow, that's shattering to your existence and what you thought of yourself. So obviously there's layers upon layers in this whole fertility. There's the physical piece, there's mental, emotional, spiritual, there's all kinds of identity issues. But I try to reframe this to myself and to my patients and say, okay, maybe this is the first time that you've needed a really serious workup, but what an opportunity for us to take a look at all these areas that you didn't even know that you needed support with. And that's great, because now we're going to work to support your fertility. And guess what? We're going to reduce your risk 20 years down the road for diabetes, osteoporosis, breast cancer, cognitive decline. So, you know, aren't we fortunate that we have the opportunity to do that now?
And not to mention, I would say even just in the short term on the pregnancy side and going through labor and postpartum, like, oh, the things you can prevent. And you can't prevent all things. I learned that the hard way, but like you can prevent a lot of things. So there's a big opportunity there. And I would also say too, that, just for grins, because this, you know, it's all, it's the best, but I also have another reframe too, that like the health conditions that we go through, I've reframed this too, in the sense that I used to think this is like something that's happening to me. And now I kind of see it as, this is an opportunity for me to reflect on and learn the things that are no longer working for me. It's an opportunity to shift into something new that will help me bring in more of what I want, you know, on the flip side. So as you mentioned, like we want, a lot of people have a goal, they want to live long lives and they want to be healthy. So this is sometimes just that opportunity to get to take a deeper look at what's going on.
And it's not easy. It's not easy to make that shift. It takes a lot of time. And oftentimes it's like in retrospect, we're able to say, this is what I've learned from this scenario. And I will even use myself as an example. In my second pregnancy, you know, I was 29 years old when my second baby was born. I was very healthy, like the picture of health on the outside, but I had pregnancy-induced hypertension, which was very surprising for people to hear. But I was also working 60 hours a week and had like an internship and a preceptorship and was in clinic and doing all these things. So no wonder.
Right.
And in retrospect, I'm able to say like, oh, maybe that wasn't the best strategy. But in the moment, I was like, I'm young and this is my time to focus on these things. So I just want to put some realness out there to say it's really hard and we don't always nail it the first time.
Or the second.
Or the second. Or maybe the third. That's cool. We're all a work in progress.
Oh, man. I actually ended up having that, this first one, and it ended up leading to preeclampsia and some, and then ended up leading to a C-section. So it was a whole thing, but it, and I do know that a lot of it is because I very similar to you like to do a lot of things. So slowing down can be a little tricky, but so important, especially in pregnancy. I've learned and am learning. Okay. So, where do we want to go from here? Can we talk a little bit about, let's go to the mitochondria.
Yeah.
Let's go to them because they're really important, especially with egg quality. And there's some very specific ways that you share on your Instagram of how we can support, our mitochondria. And maybe this is where we could go a little bit into like preparing if you have time to prepare. Yep. Want to go ahead and just kind of dive into that a little bit?
Sure. Maybe we should introduce, it's been a while since anyone took 10th grade biology and mitochondria have not been on your radar for a while. Maybe I can just describe what mitochondria are. So these are powerful and very important little organelles that are in most of our cells. And they have the best PR team, I think, because everybody knows their catchphrase. They are the powerhouse of the cell.
Yes, they do. It's so funny.
We all remember that. We all remember that mitochondria are the powerhouse of the cell. But what that means is that they create your energetic currency. So I'll describe products, processes like I said, ovulation, fertilization, implantation, early embryo development, but even like your brain working, your muscles working. These are all energetically expensive processes. So the energy that we make in our mitochondria, that is the energetic currency that we use to pay for these processes. So our mitochondria, they make all this energy, so important for fertility. If we think, like you said, about the health of our eggs, sperm really rely on healthy mitochondria to swim roughly in a straight line at a pace that is going to allow it to meet an egg. So for both male and female fertility, we're really thinking about mitochondrial health. And the thing is, which I didn't make these rules, and I apologize for the unjustness of this happening, but as we get older into our late 30s, our mitochondria, their function can start to dwindle a little bit. So we see less mitochondrial biogenesis, meaning we're just making less mitochondria. And then just because the accumulation of things like inflammation and oxidative stress over time, just we've been on the earth for longer, we have more exposures, so we can get some more mitochondrial DNA copy, or mitochondrial DNA mutations. So I really like to focus on supporting the health of the mitochondria kind of proactively, preemptively. And we do that with nutrients, so antioxidants, things like vitamins A, C, selenium, zinc. That's foundational. And oftentimes, I know this seems really simple, but I'll say if we eat the rainbow every day, we're going to get broad spectrum antioxidant coverage. I even have a checklist on my fridge. We have this thing called the phytonutrient checklist. And it's like red food, orange. I get my kids involved. It's a whole family affair. But we should all be eating the rainbow. So antioxidants, plant-based antioxidants are going to be super important. And then we can think about things like alpha lipoic acid, L-carnitine, CoQ10, which is an absolute mitochondrial support superstar. I have almost all my fertility patients on CoQ10. Things like ECGC from green tea, melatonin, N-acetylcysteine, glutathione. I mean, there's tons of different supplements that you can choose from, but I really think the basis of this is lifestyle. So eating the rainbow, getting in bed at a regular hour. I tell people I'm hoping for 8 hours, either 10 to 6 or 11 to 7, because that's how we can support our natural, our endogenous melatonin production, which is a powerful mitochondrial support. Yeah. Keeping our blood sugar stable is going to be really important for supporting our mitochondria. And then I say regular moderate intensity exercise is another great way. So we start with the foundation of lifestyle, and then we can start layering on all these cool nutraceuticals. And if we wanted to get really fancy and extreme, we could do things like infrared light exposure, sauna, hot and cold therapy. I mean, you can really escalate it, but really lifestyle is going to be your best bet.
Yeah. And foundational is food.
Always food first. Mm-hmm. So much we can do, even with something that seems so simple, like eating a rainbow, very powerful.
Yeah. It's funny that you mentioned the checklist, because most of my patients and people who've gone through my programs will know the checklist because I share it with literally everyone, because it's the easiest thing. And even for anybody out there who doesn't know exactly what we're talking about, all you really need to do is just take like all of the colors of the rainbow, red, yellow, green, blue, purple. Did I miss one? Orange. And just throughout your day, take log of like, okay, I just had lettuce on my sandwich, so that's a green. And then you just check it off. And then when you get to the end of the day, if you missed anything, that can potentially influence and guide your meals towards the end of the day if needed. But they can also, you know, be something that you can just go to the fridge and be like, okay, so I had these colors for breakfast, so now for lunch I'll have this, or for this snack I'll have this. And it's like, it's so easy, but that's what we need sometimes, is like easy, that I can just look and be like, okay.
Yeah. People always say purple and blue are the hardest for them. And so it's like this invitation from the universe to eat purple and blue foods, like the cabbage, blueberries, eggplant, these things that you maybe didn't gravitate to them originally, but now you know you need purple foods. So it's kind of cool how it can stimulate variety that we didn't have before.
Yep. I mean, we have a daily practice here of morning blueberries, like a handful of blueberries every single day. And it's just, it can guide your habits as far as like what you eat and that too, which is great. Especially when it has long-term benefits.
Not to be underestimated. And think about your little mitochondria just getting powered up. The visualization, they're just like pumping out all this energy.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Okay. So mitochondria, is there anything else that we should talk about there before I move on? Because I really want to talk a little bit about the gut, because I love the gut. But anything else mitochondria wise?
Final mitochondria hot takes.
Yeah.
I think we covered it. I mean, really the gist of it is, especially if you have anovulatory cycles, or if you have premature ovarian insufficiency, right? If there's anything that has impaired that process of a healthy egg actually being released from the ovary, I'm almost always going to go to mitochondrial support. And it's not just giving that egg cell enough energy. If we think about it, we also need mitochondrial energy to make hormones, to make our sex hormones like estrogen, testosterone, progesterone. So if in those cases where I see, you know, very low hormones, there's a lot going on, short luteal phase, a lot of my patients struggle with their luteal phase being long enough. So if anybody needs a recap, your luteal phase is from when you ovulate until your next period begins. I like to see that hopefully 14 days. If it's like 10 days, 9 days, we are really starting to think about progesterone. And mitochondrial energy production is a huge component to progesterone production as well. So those pictures of like not regularly ovulating and egg quality is suffering, let's get some mitochondrial support on board ASAP.
Yeah. And just really quickly, what are some symptoms, common symptoms of like mitochondrial dysfunction, right? So like, what do you typically see? So if somebody's listening, they could just be like, Oh wait, I have that. Maybe I should go and like, maybe take a look at this.
Yeah. So I'll differentiate really quick. You can have, you know, mitochondrial function that needs support and you can have some symptoms, and that's one area. That's where I'm going to focus on. Or you can have frank, what we call mitochondropathies, which is, you know, this is like a genetic condition or something where you probably have a diagnosis of some kind of mitochondrial issue. That's not necessarily what I'm talking about. I'm talking about mitochondrial function that just needs a little bit support. Yeah. Fatigue is going to be the number one thing. And like fatigue could be anything, right? It could be low iron. It could be hypothyroidism. So many things, but we probably need some mitochondrial support in that situation. So let's just do some, again, proactive support. Things like muscle aches and pains, exercise intolerance, migraines are a big one. Any kind of fertility struggles, irregular cycles, PCOS, anovulation. Those are probably the top ones that I see in my practice, which is obviously a very targeted demographic of reproductive age women. But I think those are the typical things you'll be thinking about.
Yeah, for sure. Also, some, like you mentioned migraines. So sometimes they'll be kind of like neuro related things like brain fog, stuff like that, because you have a ton of mitochondria in like your heart and your liver and your muscles and all those things, which like the musculoskeletal piece is super important there. You'll feel it there, but you don't have as many mitochondria in your nervous system areas. So sometimes you can kind of see a little bit more of those symptoms pop up that can kind of lead you down the road of like, maybe there's a mitochondrial thing here to pay attention to.
Let me just call out too, just like chronic pain in general. Fibromyalgia, those chronic pain conditions really oftentimes benefit from mitochondrial support. Anxiety, depression, mood disorders in general.
Yep.
You stirred up a whole avenue that I hadn't mentioned yet, but there's, we've just mentioned everyone. So I'm like, get your mitochondrial support out there.
Yeah. Well, yes. Yes. Yes and yes.
Yes.
Love me some MitoCore. That's a fabulous supplement. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the gut and the role that the gut plays. We've talked a little bit about leaky gut or intestinal permeability, or you've touched on it. What does that mean? Like, how can our gut and our microbiome and what's going on within our digestive system, how can that be related to fertility?
It's all connected.
It's all connected.
So we have our GI tract. And I always, when I'm saying leaky gut, I always want to preface it with like, your intestines are always a little bit leaky, but it's a spectrum, right? Like some things are always going to traverse from inside of our intestines into our systemic circulation, and that is normal. It's when we get this really compromised barrier function. So the cells, I'm like acting it out physically, but the cells that line our intestines, they're very tightly connected to each other. But when we have food sensitivities or we get some kind of GI infection or some environmental exposure, or we don't have enough dietary protein, or we don't have enough dietary antioxidants, but we do, right? Because we ate the rainbow, so that's fine.
Right.
But if we are lacking some of those features, then those cells that line our intestines, they can start to separate. They can start to pull apart a little bit. And a mental model a lot of people use is a cheesecloth, right? Like you can strain things through a cheesecloth and it's supposed to really filter big particles. So you can think about your gut like that. As those cells pull apart, more things can traverse that intestinal barrier and they can enter your systemic circulation. And your immune system is smart. It knows that giant food particles aren't supposed to be like floating around in your systemic circulation, and it will activate your immune system. That's what it's designed to do. Your immune system is designed to do that. But in doing so, we create this inflammatory cascade. And it's good because it's protecting us from things like infection, but it's bad because those inflammatory chemicals are then traveling throughout our entire circulation and reaching our reproductive organs and our heart and our joints and our brain. So one of the ways that we can control systemic inflammation is by ensuring that our gut barrier function is good. Like I said, by, you know, removing foods that we're sensitive to and getting enough dietary protein and getting enough antioxidants. And then if we need to, calling upon things like colostrum and zinc and these supportive nutrients that can really protect our barrier function. And so there's lots of fertility implications, but I would say there's lots of implications in chronic disease in general when we have a really leaky barrier function.
Right. Which has all sorts of causes. And I do think, I know I have a episode here for athletes specifically around leaky gut. So you could put like, you can potentially go back on, I'll link that in the show notes, but I don't think I have one specifically on just leaky gut and like the microbiome and bacteria and all the role that plays. Maybe that will be coming up. But I talk a lot about the gut because the gut is just such a, while it's not the only thing, it is a very important thing, process that happens inside the body. And a lot of things that also happen with the gut are also associated with what's going on in your brain and with your mind as well. So there's so many aspects to look at how the gut could be playing a role or a factor in fertility issues or anything else going on with our health. So it's a really important place to look and just be aware of. So if you're having bloating, diarrhea, constipation, like any gamut of the things, it's just something to keep in mind that there might be some looking into an exploration to do there.
It's warranted. And you mentioned the microbiome, and that is also so important. That's the constellation of bacteria that are in our gut. And I've been so excited over even the last 5 years to see all the research coming out about the microbiome and implications in fertility. And so fascinating how we see this crosstalk between the bacteria in our gut and the bacteria in our mouth, for example, the bacteria in our gut and the bacteria that are in the vagina and the bladder and the uterus and even in our joint spaces is really mind blowing. And these are the things that I think about when I'm just sitting in quiet by myself, that like our gut, that our whole gastrointestinal tract, if you think about it, it's open at the front and it's open at the back, and it's just like a tube through our body, and it's kind of the way that we engage with the outside world.
Right.
And so it's so important, and it's a protective mechanism, right, but it's also an absorptive, a highly absorptive surface. Anyway, I'll refocus us back on the microbiome just to say that there's all of these ways that our microbiome can influence our fertility. And I'd say the world of the vaginal microbiome is growing more and more. And the uterine microbiome, for the longest time, we were told that the uterus was sterile, which of course it's not. There has to be bacteria there, right?
Right. Right.
And I always share this information that is mind-blowing to me, that when we look at, so there's these really interesting studies that looked at placental infections, and they traced them back to bacteria that was in the gingival plaques of the mom. So I think in our brain, we intuitively are like, oh, if there was an infection in the placenta, clearly that bacteria, you know, migrated from the vaginal space, because that just makes sense.
Right.
No, those bacteria were not present in the vagina. They clearly came from gingival plaques. So what? That is such a stunning example of bacterial crosstalk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And your immune system is constantly interacting with all of these things. So if you have an infection in one place, it's not that like out of it's, you'd think it would only be there, just like you mentioned, but it can be in many different places. And this is also why sometimes when you catch a yeast in the gut, that's not always we don't necessarily always need to like annihilate it, but it is important to think about, especially if you get constant yeast infections, or if you notice that you have, you know, imbalances in those places. We got to be thinking about the whole picture here, because your microbiome is all over, but we have individual microbiomes in each place that we have. So there, it's your immune system. It's going to be interacting with all of it. And as you mentioned, with tracking down, like,
all over,
but also, as you mentioned, with systemic inflammation and tracking down that, that's also like a very important place to look at, because those, just as you mentioned, like gingival plaques and just low grade infections can actually be extremely, well, and it can create a constant battle for your immune system to be fighting. You may not even know that it's there, and then that can be creating that systemic inflammation. So again, this is why working with someone like Dr. Kalia and in the functional medicine world is so critical, especially when you're dealing with things like this, because it's how we're asking the right questions, and are we being able to look at it from a whole perspective to really get a good picture of what's happening here. And you may not catch that right off the bat. That might be something that eventually you get to, and then, whoa, like, there we go. But yeah, there's so much more often going on than what we think.
Yeah, I think you raise a good point about asking the right questions, asking more questions, staying curious. You know, inflammation is an interesting example. If we think about, I measure a marker called high sensitivity C-reactive protein, HSCRP, in my practice. And I think a lot of times people will get the elevated CRP and it's like, oh, you have elevated inflammation, but then nobody really knows what to do with that.
Now what?
Now what, right? Where I'll see that, and it's not the end of the story for me. That's just the beginning. Now I'm going to go looking for these triggers. Like you said, look in the mouth. We got to stay curious and just keep asking questions to figure out where this is coming from. So I think that's a big, one of the beautiful pieces about functional medicine is that we're using these clues to help us tell a story, and the investigation doesn't end with the diagnosis.
Yeah, that's only the beginning. And I think that's such a great, it's a reframe that's very needed, because I know what I see is that people are chasing the diagnosis, and then it's like the sense of relief because they've got this answer as far as a name. But that's actually the starting place rather than a finishing point, just because there's now we got to do something about it. And I know that it's nice to have a name to the symptoms, but we don't always necessarily need a name to the symptoms, especially if we can look and see what's going on with each system. I don't know if you agree with me on that, but that's kind of how 100%. I tend to look at things.
Yeah. And I've said before, it sounds so cheesy, but it's like, I don't treat diagnosis codes. I treat people, right? So it doesn't, it matters. It matters to me because it opens doors and it allows us to get labs and it allows us to do the right thing. It's not that I don't care about it, but it doesn't, that's not what drives my investigation.
Yep. Exactly. Well, we've talked about a lot of things. And we could potentially talk about so many more. We could talk about the liver and the role that the liver plays in all of this. But I know that people are going to be like, but what about my hormones? Mm-hmm. Because it's such a big piece that goes into fertility. And it is an area where people tend to focus a lot. And I know that that could be an entire series, which I know you have a podcast. So I'll also make sure that everybody will have all the links to all the things, but for where you can find Dr. Kalia. But like general things about hormones, if we're looking at fertility, what are just some things we need to know about our hormones from a fertility perspective?
Yep. I think I'll start. I'm going to take it all the way back to square one and just talk about my philosophy with hormones.
Great. So that sounds awesome.
In functional medicine, we kind of evaluate and treat hormones in a specific order. We go adrenals, thyroid, sex hormones, right? So I'm never just going to measure your estrogen and testosterone if I haven't done a thyroid evaluation first, right? Our adrenal function really influences the way that we produce thyroid hormones. And then thyroid hormone is actually needed to make other hormones like progesterone, which everybody always wants to talk about progesterone. So I think if we're going to be comprehensive, we're going to evaluate all of those areas. And there are so many other players to this, but I'm going to keep it simple and say adrenals, thyroid, and then sex hormones. So if we look at kind of normal reproductive physiology, we know that in the first half of our cycle, our brain is going to release two different hormones. Follicle stimulating hormone is the first one. And follicle stimulating hormone is going to tell our ovaries, let's start maturing this group of eggs. And then from those eggs, we're going to choose one, the golden one, and we're going to ovulate that egg. So FSH is stimulating our ovaries, and those little follicles, which are the egg sacs that our egg cells are swimming in, they are going to grow and grow, and they are going to start pumping out estradiol, which is our main circulating form of estrogen in a reproductive age female. Once estrogen gets high enough, our brain is going to say, okay, we've done our job here. We have a nice, juicy, mature follicle. Now I'm going to trigger that follicle to release that egg cell. So the brain is going to release a big surge of this hormone called luteinizing hormone that is going to cause that egg to burst from its follicle. And that is ovulation, which is so exciting. That follicle where that egg cell lived is going to now become, it's going to fill the fat. It's going to become a structure called the corpus luteum, and it's going to start pumping out progesterone. And that progesterone is going to sustain our endometrium. It's going to make it nice and juicy and thick and prevent it from shedding right away, you know, like we do in our period. But once that corpus luteum over time, over about 2 week period, it's going to start shrinking and wasting away. And once it's so small, it's not producing progesterone anymore. That's when our uterine lining is going to shed. We're going to have our period unless we get pregnant. And then the progesterone will be sustained by HCG and we will continue to pump out progesterone. So these are the main hormones that I'm thinking about. So on cycle day 3 specifically, I will measure FSH, LH, and estradiol. And then a week after ovulation, I'm going to measure progesterone just to make sure that corpus luteum was nice and strong. So those are kind of there's lots of other hormones, thyroid hormone, insulin is a hormone, all kinds of other hormones we could talk about, but those are my very essential hormones to understand how your menstrual cycle is functioning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you asked for that level of detail, but I love to tell the story of the egg cell.
Yes. No, it's really important. I know we learn about it like ad nauseum almost, in the sense that I think it got repeated in like most of the classes I took throughout chiropractic school. It was like,
that's good. good.
Yeah, you know, but it's funny because it wasn't until after school, though, that I was like, wait, I actually talk about this a lot. And especially when I was working a lot with female athletes,
Yeah.
it became a very, very critical part of what I talked about. But that being said, yes, it's very important to know how these things are functioning, because the more educated we are, then we are knowledgeable that we are, then we can do something about it. If there is something that's not quite operating or functioning the way we would like it to. So, since we know how it is supposed to be functioning, well, we already talked about some of the common causes of imbalances. I actually would really like to talk just a little bit more about the adrenals and the thyroid.
Yeah.
Because I know how common it is to miss that step. Can we break down a little bit how the adrenals and the thyroid, can we just dive into that a little bit further?
Sure, would love to. Okay. So if we think about the adrenals, it's very common for us to think about the hormone cortisol, which is produced by the adrenal glands. Yes. And I just have to take justice for cortisol, because cortisol is villainized. Everyone's like, oh, it's the stress hormone. And it is. But cortisol is very important to keep us alive. It's actually anti-inflammatory in nature in the right situation. And so cortisol is what gives us the will to get up in the morning and get out of bed and keep us going. That's why cortisol is inherently highest in the morning. So anyway, justice for cortisol, we do need it. It's when it gets excessive or when it's not in the right pattern that it becomes a problem. So cortisol should be highest in the morning, and then it falls throughout the course of the day. It's at its lowest point in the evening, where its counterpart, melatonin, takes over. So the thing about cortisol is, when it is elevated throughout the day, it can inhibit these hormones that I talked about, FSH and LH. So at the level of the brain, excessive cortisol can cause issues with the release of those hormones. And so you can see how, you know, when we walked through the whole development of an egg cell, if those hormones are suppressed, we're going to get less maturation of our egg cells, and we're not going to ovulate as regularly. So that's kind of where those two systems are connected.
Mm-hmm.
And then with our thyroid, there's all kinds of stuff going on with our thyroid hormone. Our thyroid hormone, this is the most fascinating part. This is what I want to tell you. So I've talked about the follicles, which are little egg sacs that our egg cells are just swimming in. And those are mostly comprised of cells called granulosa cells. Those are the main cell type. And they're beloved to me. I just really am a fan of granulosa cells. But they are what we call the helper cells, or the nourishing cells of our oocyte, our egg cell. And thyroid hormone activates those granulosa cells. So it allows them to communicate with the egg cell. It allows them to receive hormonal signals from the brain. So when we have low thyroid function, we see that our egg cells are not maturing. We have more anovulatory cycles. So again, thyroid hormone is so, so, so important. When we have low thyroid hormone, we also have increased risk for things like low birth weight and premature delivery and even early pregnancy loss. And so this is something that's so important that we're screening for, because if someone has low thyroid function or low thyroid hormone, we can treat that. We can treat that really easily. And it's, I think, low hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
So thyroid hormone is super important. And then, as you can see, if we're going to do a whole comprehensive approach, we're really going to look at our adrenals and do a full thyroid panel. And maybe I'll just take 2 seconds and talk about what that means, because people are always like, what is that?
Yeah, with sure. Full thyroid? Go ahead. Go ahead.
So that's TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. That's the message that goes from the brain to the thyroid to tell the thyroid gland to make thyroid hormone. But then we need to know that the thyroid cares, right? Because the thyroid gland can be like, that's cool, brain, but I'm literally not
something else. That. We're on a different program.
On a different, that's not my journey.
not
so journey. We also have to measure free thyroid hormone. So I measure free T4, which is the less potent but more abundant thyroid hormone. And then I measure free T3, which is the less abundant but more potent thyroid hormone. I also measure thyroid antibodies, like we talked about. We want to make sure that there's not autoimmune thyroid disease going on. And then in some cases, I'll also measure reverse T3, which I'm sure you've talked about a million times. It acts as our metabolic brake in situations where there's inflammation or infection or low energy in our body. And our body is like, okay, we need to slow the rate of metabolism because we are not well. I'll measure reverse T3 as well. So for me, that's what a full thyroid panel looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think that's great. I think that's a really good place to kind of just, we've talked about so many different areas that I know there's still plenty more we could talk about, but I mean, we have blood sugar. We have, maybe we'll do a second tip of the iceberg.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe we'll dive into some of the other areas too, that are really important. But, I think that gives people a really good place to kind of start looking at it as like, okay, I think I know what I can do as far as supporting my mitochondria, my gut, my thyroid, my adrenals, hormones, yeah. All of that. Mm-hmm. Most of it starting really with food. And then if there's anything, if people have been struggling with fertility, and infertility, maybe hopefully this will help guide them to some other resources that maybe they haven't yet explored. So that leads me to the very exciting functional fertility blueprint course that you have. You want to talk to that about that a little bit?
I would love to talk about that a little bit. So this is my 8-week program that really was designed to walk anyone through how I work up a patient when I'm working one-to-one. I realized this type of care is not accessible to everyone, and I am on a mission to make it more available. So this is an online program. It's asynchronous. You work through it at your own pace. It walks through demystifying your menstrual cycle and figuring out all these hormones, finding your fertile window, maximizing your cervical mucus, which we could do a whole episode on. It walks through fertility lifestyle factors, sleep, nutrition, stress management, relationships. We actually have an exercise where I have a tool called the Functional Fertility Imbalance Detector, where it's a series of quizzes that you use to build your own matrix. And it's so empowering because you understand which of your body systems need the most support. And then there's dedicated lessons to help you work through those body systems. We talk about supplements, male fertility, reproductive longevity. If you're like, I want to protect my fertility through, you know, maybe I want to have a baby when I'm 40. So we talk about reproductive longevity. And we talk about maximizing the health of eggs and sperm. So everything that we've covered here, we really dive deep on. And so I want participants to feel really empowered to care for their fertility now and into the future. So that's the Functional Fertility Blueprint. It's like my soul work. And thank you for letting me talk about it.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. And just for everybody here, we will have the link to her website in the show notes. So you can go right there and click on it and you'll get all the information that you absolutely need. And by the time this one comes out, you'll literally be able to just go and join. Mm-hmm. Right up. So, oh, Dr. Kalia, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing all of this wonderful knowledge with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had such a good time.
Ah, me too. We should do more of these.
Agreed.
That's so fun. Okay. Thank you, everybody, for joining us and for listening. Make sure to check out Dr. Kalia, and you can find her on Instagram as well. It's where I like to hang out with her. I learned so much. And we will see you next week for the next episode. Take care.